everyone. Welcome to our call tonight. Calling from New York City, doing some business up here, and it is nice and beautiful. It is September 12th, 2012. My name is Kurt Mortensen, and this is the Persuasion Influence Self-Mastery Call of the Week, where we spend a few minutes talking about persuasion tools, take your questions. You can send me those via the net. You can ask me over the phone. Those on the replay, we'll just have to have some correspondence. Make sure you get your questions answered, either things you're running into or things that you might run into. Those are always good ways to think it through. Get some questions and me address some of those and get you some great tools. Again, just give you a few tools a week. It just dramatically increases your success and your income, and it becomes part of you. Obviously, when you try any new tool for the first time, it's a little challenging, it's different, it's awkward. But once you start really understanding how it works, why it works, human nature, it really, really helps you out. So the first concept I want to touch base on, just the question here is, Kurt, what's power have to do with persuasion, influence, and negotiation? I negotiate for a living and want to know how to incorporate power. Now, power is neutral, just like gravity is neutral. Gravity is neither good nor bad. It just depends if you're falling from a tree or walking. But there is power. What power does is it increases your ability to persuade and influence and to negotiate. When you have, and there's various forms of power we'll talk about, it can be a very, very good thing. For example, a police officer's gun, that's a form of power, and that increases their ability to persuade people. A police officer's uniform, even if they didn't have a gun, even if it was a rent-a-cop, that uniform would increase their power, their ability to persuade you. They even did a study in New York City, just wearing a milk person's uniform, a white uniform, and they say, hey, could you put a dime in that meter, put a quarter in that meter, would increase the chances. We know if you wear a nurse's uniform or a fireman's uniform at a stoplight asking for money, it increases your donation. So there's something about uniforms and how we look. That is definitely a form of power. We have authority power, which could be you're the CEO, Esquire, Vice President. That's all authority power. I'm the boss. I remember when my very first sales job that I took, a brand spanking new, and they made these business cards up for me, and they said regional sales manager because it had a little better pull than, you know, rookie, just started, doesn't know much. It was regional sales manager. So there's something about authority. So if you're negotiating with a vice president of a bank, there's an authority thing there. If they are the CEO, any of those things, there's authority power. There's also reward power. If they know that you have information that they need, a contact that they need, a resource that they need, that's also a form of power. There's also dark forms of power. There's coercive power, where you tend to manipulate, intimidate, threats, where you find out some skeletons in the closet. What about the time you did this? I saw you do this. What about the time that sort of thing. I don't recommend that, but that just for the sake of conversation, let's say, you know, that's a form of power that people do use because it's easy, it's quick. Coercive, a knife, a gun, it's all coercive power. One I kind of want to address today, because we can understand authority power, reward power, there's knowledge power. When somebody knows more than you, that's a form of power. Well, they're the lawyer, well, they're the president. You have, but car mechanics have that power. And they say, you know, your blinker fluid's low. Even though it doesn't exist, if you don't know any better, you might be changing your blinker fluid. Now, negotiation, old negotiation tricks, they still teach these. They use psychological power to kind of freak you out. So I want to talk about some dark tricks people will and may play on you, not so you can use them. It's not my intent here. I do not want you to use them. I'm against these forms of these tactics. But if you're not aware of them and what they're doing, it can really hurt your ability to negotiate and persuade and influence. That's why I want to teach you a few of these psychological things. Because even if they just act bold, like they know what they're doing and throw their weight around, sometimes they'll use surprise or distraction and throw you off your guard. They did one, this is actually New York City too, where people on the subway, they found out if they had asked you for your seat and they surprised you, 56% of people said yes. But if you saw, he didn't surprise you. For example, you saw, can I have your seat? No. Can I have your seat? No. Can I have your seat? No. Only 28% did. Some will use pity as a form of power or space evasion as a form of power. And that's one we see quite a bit. It's what we call proxemics, the study of space. They'll get in your face. They might, one they do train people on that you will see, I guarantee you if you get out there, is they'll put you in a seat that's an inch shorter than everyone else. They'll actually cut the legs off because you subconsciously feel a little intimidated, a little short, and that's, you're like, really? No, really, they do. They might put you in the sun. They might order food and not offer you any. They might not give you a break. They might smoke in a non-smoking room. Yeah, could happen. And you have to be prepared for this. They're just tricks or tactics. So I want to kind of go over a few of these that you might be, that you will see. And it's fun when I teach the larger negotiation events. I see people say, yeah, I've had that one. I've had that one. Because they're there. They teach them. Again, they're dark. They're dirty. I call them the dirty deeds. And you need to understand what they're trying to do. So take good notes here. Again, those on the replay line, we're going to have to email me with any questions here. I got a question. It says, Kurt, if these dark forms of power are so dark, why do people still use them? Because they're easy. Do it or you're fired. Do it because I'm a parent. Do it or you're grounded. Do it because I have a gun. Do it because I have a knife. Do it or I'm going to tell everyone about the time you did this. That's easy. Yeah. Again, it's dark. No one likes it, but it's easy and it works. And that's why people do it, because if it's worked in the past, they're going to do it again. That's why they use them. Now, they're not all dark. Now, this is the next question is, Kurt, all forms of power dark? No, I mean, there's legitimate power. If you have earned the power being the CEO, earning the respect and having charisma and people want to be around you, if you've earned the authority for having the knowledge or having the knowledge and being the expert, there's great forms of power, and you can use those legitimately. If you have resources that they need or a contact or information, those can all be legitimate forms of power. And so, yeah, a lot of dark ones, but a lot of good ones too. But again, I'm talking the dark ones so you can realize what's going on out there, what is happening, and that is my goal. Again, now, the first one I want to talk about, if I was going to put it on a scale, this would be yellow. It wouldn't be in the red. This is really not that dark. But you need to be ready for it because they train it. This is negotiation 101 for a lot of people. What they do, it's called the flinch. No matter what you offer, no matter what you do, they're going to fall off their seat. They're going to be shocked. Their jaw's going to drop. It's highway robbery. How could you? What are you thinking? And they're just adjusting your expectations. They're just trying to see if they can get more. So what do? Ignore it. You know what your numbers you need. You've done your research. You know exactly what's going on. Just ignore it. Not a big deal. Or you might ask them, well, what did you expect to invest, or what were you looking for? You see this, especially in Asia. If you ever go to Asia, they watch your eyes. Your eyes tell a lot about you. They say, well, hey, how much are the glasses? Well, they're $20. And if you don't flinch, they say, for the frames. Well, how much for the lens? $20. If you don't flinch, for each lens, okay? So instead of spending $20 for the whole thing, you're spending $60 because they're looking for that flinch. You will see what I call the press, where they really get in your face and say things like, well, you're going to have to do better than that. I have to have this or it's no deal. If you don't negotiate right now, in your face, right? They're setting the limits. You're trying to gain control. Remember, the only way to really lose, if you want to gain control back, is you ask questions. And someone just asked you this question, says, Kurt, what do you do when you identify these? Well, as I go through these, you have to decide, all right? Someone's being dirty and dark and playing a psychological trick on you. What do you do? Well, the first thing we need to know is that you're identifying it. That's half the battle. So first of all, we identify it. We see it's happening. Number two, if it's really dark, you have to decide, do I want to do business with this person long term? If the answer is no, you'll walk. if it's something you need, you've been waiting for the meeting, you have to do business with them, you just make a mental note that's what they're doing and it's not getting to you. I have to leave that up to you. I can't make that decision for you. You have to decide how dark it is, how mean it is, how much you want to do business with them, or if you want to walk. So if someone's really in your face, you have to do better than that. You come back with a question. If they say, you're going to have to do better than that. You don't make an offer. You say, well, how much more do you need? What are you looking for? What do you expect to invest? Throw it back at them. Keep the power. One we see especially in real estate transactions is what I call the low ball, high ball. So what happens is, this is actually pretty dirty. Let's say you have a, make some numbers up here. A home you want to sell, you got out of foreclosure, a lot of equity, $300,000. And you know, it's a good price, you can sell pretty fast. And so what happens is someone comes up, I'll give you $200. You're like, go away. Another one says, I'll give you $180. I'm like, no, $190 is the next offer. $210. These people are all from the same company. They're setting you up to adjust your mindset about what it's really worth, because human nature is like, oh, maybe I was wrong. I'm getting all these weird offers, and ultimately someone will come in, I'll give you $250, and you take it because you're like, whew. Be very careful of that. Make sure you, if they give you a number like that, say, okay, what's your standard? Where did you get that number? Where did that number come from? And they say, well, I just know. You know they're pulling it out of the air. You also see shocking behavior. Yes, adults will have temper tantrums. They will pout. They will throw insults around. Okay? Because they don't know what to do next. They're not sure. It's a Chinese proverb that says the man that strikes first admits his ideas are given out. They've run out of ideas. They don't know what to do. That's when they get angry. That's when they yell. They pout. They insult. They try to make it your fault. And that is not what you want. So when that happens, silence works well. Kind of ignore it, move on. See, it's an interesting point. I apologize that you're feeling that way. Do we need a break? You're moving on. You're moving on. Because when people get angry, what happens is blood leaves their brain. It's a flight or flight response. And so if you see them starting to go red in the face, they're getting angry. Blood's leaving the brain. They're not thinking straight. Now, if their face goes from red to white, time to go. Okay, that means a lot of the blood's left the brain to where it's turned white and they're not thinking straight. And that's, you have to be very careful. That might be a great time for a break or distraction and to move on. Now, one, two, that you see quite a bit is what I call the nibble. Now, what's that? Well, what happens is you're close to the end of a persuasion or sale or negotiation, whatever it is. You're at the end, and you're like, whoo, we made it, woohoo! You're feeling good. And then they say, okay, done deal. It is a deal. But I need to make sure you include the playset or the piano, or you include the warranty, or you double my order. Or they might say, it's a deal, provided you do this. Great, that's what I'm looking for. So they're nibbling right at the very end, looking for a little extra. Why do they do this? They're just looking for a last-minute concession, if that's what they've been trained to do. And you just have to understand, when someone does that, you have to nibble back. Oh, okay, you bet. We could double your order, but you know we have to do 25 cents a unit instead of 22 cents a unit. You bet. You know I'm happy to include the cabinets in the garage, but you're going to have to close in 30 days instead of 60. Oh, okay. Well, if you want me to include the warranty, that means we'll include the warranty, but we're going to have to do it at 6% instead of 5%. Okay? That's what we're looking at. If they're going to nibble, you nibble back. Now, an even darker form of this is when they say, well, you did say the warranty was included, didn't you? Now, it's dirty because you've never talked about it. You've never brought it up. And you're like, well, no. He said, yeah, I'm pretty sure you did. Well, the insurance is included, right? Well, the piano comes with the house, right? And then you have to decide at that moment, okay, what are you going to do? You going to go with it? Now, the great thing, important thing about negotiation, you're taking good notes. Or you might want to say, no, I'm sorry you misunderstood. The price I offered includes this, this, and this. you know, if you really want the insurance or the warranty, we're going to have to go back to the beginning and renegotiate this whole thing and understand how it works. Now, what really amazes me that people fall for, your emotions get involved here, is the mix-up. If you ever get an accidental email or a fax saying something like, hey, we're working on this project with so-and-so, which is your name, we're doing this and this, we have to make sure they don't find out about this. If it's too good to be true and you're like, oh, they accidentally sent it to me, no. Mm-mm. They did it on purpose. They're trying to adjust your perceptions and your... It's a last-ditch effort, very deceitful. Don't mention it. You probably want to ignore it. Again, if you think it's a stroke of good luck that you accidentally received an email, you actually got copied into an email, think again. All right. Question here about, is the use of pity a dirty deed? I'm not sure what you're kind of referring to, but pity has been used to be very persuasive over the ages. If you look at the muscular dystrophy telethon, they've been beat up quite a few times because they use pity. They bring the kids out. We feel sorry. We pull out our wallets. I mean, you have to decide how ethical that is. But you have to be careful of this. What they're trying to do with pity is to make their problem your problem. If someone says, my wife's pregnant, my car needs a transmission, my mother's bedridden, I mean, you can feel sorry, you can apologize, you can do as much as you can, but you have to be careful with that. They're doing that because they're trying to evoke empathy. They might say something, well, come on, I'm down and out, you're the wealthy one, why don't you help me out? You can have it. I mean, you can help to a certain point, but if they're really trying to take advantage, you have to be very careful. You can have empathy, so, you know, I can't make that decision. I have to talk to a boss or higher authority. So it has been used. You know, how you draw the line is going to be up to you. Another question here about the old good cop, bad cop. It says, Kurt, they still use good cop, bad cop. And you've seen these in the shows, right? If you watch Law and Order or any show, good cop, bad cop. So they have someone in a room, they're interrogating them. One's just, I know where you live, I'm going to beat you up, I'm going to kill you, how could you? And then the good cop goes, oh, hey, ho, take a break. Ooh, man, you're lucky he didn't kill you. Here's a donut, here's some coffee. And the answer is they still use it. Can you believe it? They still use it. They're trained to use it. It's so old school. They do it for intimidation. They do it because they've been trained. What do you do when it happens? One thing you can do is just be silent and move on. Didn't faze you, whatever, let them vent. My favorite thing is to identify it. Are you guys using good cop, bad cop? Is that what's going on here? And it adjusts it real fast. You might want to say, wow, okay, you're obviously upset. Where's the solution here? What should we do? What's going on? That can be part of the good cop, bad cop. Question here came in. It says, do these happen when there's mostly emotions, or does it happen with every negotiation? I think I understand the question here. The answer, I mean, there's always a balance between logic and emotion. And the answer is absolutely. When emotions tend to hit high, like anger, resentment, frustration, they think you're trying to take advantage of them, they don't know what to do next, you will see these. So emotions does increase the chances you're going to see some of these dirty deeds. And you just have to be, the main thing you have to do as a persuader, just reading this question here about what if you get angry. Now, you should never be angry as a persuader. You need to check your ego, your emotions at the door. It's easier said than done, but hey, if they're going to be all over the gamut with their emotions, when you're in control, you'll have more credibility, you'll have more trust. So the answer is you keep them in control. You should rarely get angry as far as a power play is concerned. You will have people that do the confrontation. Hey, what's your final price? Give me your final price. And you haven't even said hello. You haven't said anything. They're in your face. Your final price. I don't have a lot of time. Give me your best deal. What is it? Let's get to the chase. Let's go. Very aggressive, very in your face. Like, whoa, where did that come from? So if somebody does that, usually it's because they haven't done their research. They're looking for a way out. So if someone says, what's your final price? You say, what price are you looking for? You're like, or you can use a little humor and say, whoa, you missed a turn. this is a negotiation. I make an offer, then you make an offer. That's how it works. But that's how you deal with a situation like that. Also, sometimes that you have to be very careful of, we talked about, you know, people making the phony offer. But let me just say this. A lot of times, especially in real estate, we'll see this. Phil, someone makes the perfect offer, you're excited. So you want, you don't throw out enough numbers, $200,000 for this house. They say, okay, we'll take it, $200,000, we'll take it. Okay, good. You're like, whoo, you do your little dance, sing a little song, tell your family and friends, you're excited, and they show up the next day with a cashier's check for $190,000. You're like, oh, what do you do? As all I could get, I'm sorry. That's all we can do. $10,000 short. Wow. You have to decide if you're going to take it, if you're going to walk. Maybe you want to put the rest on one of your credit cards, put the rest on financing. The main thing is, when you're, especially with real estate, you want to make sure you keep all the interested parties till you the money's in the bank, because a lot of strange things happen. Strange things happen. So, those are just a few of the ones that make a big difference. I got a question here about splitting the difference, if that's a dirty deed. Splitting the difference. I think everyone knows what that is. So what happens is, you want $100,000 and they're at $80,000, and so the technique is, okay, let's split the difference. And you go with $90,000. Now, that can work. I would never lead with it, but it can go dirty. It definitely can. And this is where it goes dirty. This is what happens. Okay, they say, okay, you're at $100,000 and I'm at $80,000. Let's be in the middle at 90. Is that okay? Is 90 okay? You're like, okay, I'll do 90. 90 works for me. And they say, great. So since you're at 90 and I'm at 100, so let's do 95. Let's be in the middle at 95. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So they kind of do a double split the difference. And they're like, what do you mean? You said you would take 90. Didn't you say you'd take 90? And I'm at 100. Let's do 95. Okay, that's time to walk. You say, oh, let me explain split the difference to you. And that can work at dirty. So normally it will work towards the end of a negotiation, but never lead with split the difference. Any other questions out there? Are you running into or more about the dirty deeds or power? Question just came in. Let's see. Oh, okay. About concessions. Now, the key thing about concessions, twofold. We notice a negotiation, I've monitored, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of negotiations, is that it's called reciprocal concessions. And what that means is, if you let them persuade you on a few points along the way, they're easier to persuade down the road. So it's okay to give concessions. If they ask for a concession, you ask for a concession. But the challenge where it turns dirty a lot of times is what I call thin slicing. Well, how about a little bit here, a little bit here? So if you thin slice a whole ham, eventually you get the whole ham. So what they're doing is like, so they're asking for teeny little pieces along the way. How about this? How about this? How about this? How about this? Eventually they have the whole thing, and you don't even know it. So every time they ask for a concession, you ask for a concession. And realize, too, that if you can let them persuade you, say, you know, that's a good point. Yeah, I am going to give you that. Thanks for bringing that up. Let them persuade you on a few points. Then when you really need it, they're more open for concessions and persuasion. So be very careful how you do that. The best rule is, if they're going to ask for something, you're going to ask for something. And you should go into negotiation and list all the things or any persuasion situation, and list the things you really don't care about, and don't throw them in. Slowly give them away. Give them away, and it goes a long way. Any other questions? Over the phone, via the net. One question says, Kurt, I was working on a negotiation and they volunteered to use their lawyers for the contract. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay as long as you review it. You have to be careful, obviously, if it's their lawyer, their contract, it's going to be favorable to them. And I know deal with book publishers, it's like, wow, their standard contract is not very standard, not very favorable. You got to go through and renegotiate all those things. And the dirty, where it turns dirty, and sometimes it might be completely legitimate, and here's where it turns dirty. So they call the oops. So they say, okay, we're in agreement. Let me change that one paragraph. They go and change it. I know you don't want to, but you got to read that whole thing again. You don't know what they put back in, what they've added, what they changed. You're like, well, how did that get in there? You know, the final draft, the changes weren't made, they changed a word, very deceitful, very dark, but it does happen. So you need to, or someone always read you that final full text. Never assume they changed it. Never assume they just changed that one paragraph and didn't change other things. Or maybe you want to use your lawyers, you want to write the contract. So for the most part, it might be, I don't want to taint you. There's a lot of great, honest people out there. They're trying to do business. But I also want to warn you, there's the flip side, that one out of every 10,000 people is dishonest. And I made that up. Makes me feel better. Makes me feel better. But, you know, they're out there. You don't want to assume they're going to be deceitful. Just have your eyes open. Be aware that things can happen. And that's how people are. And you have to decide if you're walking or if you're just going to deal with it. And that's why I teach these things, not so you can use them, but just to be aware. There's some people out there, they've been trained on some of these things, and, you know, it really holds them back. Any other questions?
Yes, I have one, Kurt, and this has to do with salary negotiation. And these days, sometimes when you're applying for jobs online, they ask you what your salary expectation is, and you can't put to be negotiated or anything like that, they actually ask you for a number. So if you get through the process and it comes down to discussing salary, I mean, what kind of leeway do you have? I mean, if you've put in a salary expectation on the initial application, is it good to up that number, or should you say the same number, or, you know, what kind of leverage do you have in those kind of situations?
Man, that's a tough call because they've kind of put you in a spot. If you've been too high, they're not going to interview you. If you bid it too low, you're not going to have enough to pay the bills. And that's a power play on their part. That's kind of a – not that you wouldn't call it dirty, but that's a power play on their part because they know they've got more applicants than they do jobs.
Right.
So you want to kind of shoot down the middle. And,
okay.
And then hopefully the main goal is to get yourself an interview. And
right.
So you want to be able to bid it out to make sure you're getting the interview, that you're qualified. Then they can say, well, you know, we talked about this. I always said, yeah, but that was before I knew I had to have this experience, and I'd done this. And I did a little research and found out the average person's making this, and I kind of lowballed that a little bit. So if you kind of went in with more information, and especially when they made you that first offer, you know, the salary negotiations, right, then they make the first offer, you're like, really? Is that the best you can do? Well, is that what, you know, a lot of times they'll come out with higher numbers. So what I would do is kind of put maybe a good number, but maybe a little lower than you expect, but then have enough research, because your goal is to get the interview.
Right, right.
That's the goal. You got to go in and prove your worth and get the interview, and then from there, once you've proved your worth, then it's easier to negotiate a higher salary or more benefits. You might say something like, well, I put that down, but that was not including, you know, health insurance and vacation package and severance and this and that. Now, when I add all those, that goes up to this amount.
Okay.
Give you a few tools there. But that is tough. They put you in a spot. So you want to get it enough to where you're getting the interview, and then from there it's easier to adjust that.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
You bet. Any questions? All right. Again, we're going to post the recording at whypersuasion.com. Any questions, you can post those there too. Everyone have an incredible week. Next week, if you're on a plane flight, if for some reason I'm not on the call, I think we're going to have to post, if you go to whypersuasion.com, I am going to post a recording for next week just in case, because it's going to be a tight connection for me, and that's always going to be the case. I'll make sure that you have the training. So next week, let's just plan on doing a recording, and then we'll pick it up live the week after that. With that, everyone, have an incredible week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.